It's ZA Confidential, the wine tasting podcast where we taste wine and podcast away. And today we are returning once again to the vineyards of the Cape with our lovely little red, at least it looks lovely in my little glass. We don't get a lot on these programs. Before we introduce the wine, it really is important that we introduce our panel of pretty distinguished tasters. If we had to pay them to come along to this, there wouldn't be much money left in the South African Reserve Bank, because they are all so elite and wonderful. We have Chris Hart, well-known economist, and also these days he does some strategic investments and all sorts of interesting stuff, impact investment, and if you've got money to throw away, send it to Chris. Our other Chris is Chris Gilmore, who is a writer and author, a broadcaster, an analyst, and also a Scotsman. You'd never guess it, but he is. We have Mike Schussler, who is another senior, well-known, much-loved economist, and a piece that, that I wrote on a presentation he gave on some of the pension horrors facing South Africa, got the highest ever hit rate on ZA Confidential, around 37,000 hits, which for me is wonderful, because normally it's about 37 if I'm lucky. Jeremy Sampson we have, who is a great brander, and that's all I have to say about him. And we have our food and wine guru, Michael Olivier. Michael, what's the wine?
It's an Overgouw Merlot 2017. Now, the Van Veldens who own Overgouw, I've known now through four generations of really, really good people. David, the young man who now runs the estate, he has, I have not met his children, who are the fourth generation. Way back in 1982, the Overgouw Merlot of that vintage was the first bottling of an estate Merlot. Now, for me, I think this wine needs certainly a couple of years with some nice, cool cellaring, because I think everything is quite pronounced. The fruit, I think, is fantastic. There's wonderful plums there, and they're red berries. The oak, even though he's used second, third fill, and even beyond third fill, using sort of blonde French oak barrels, 225 litre barrels. I think the tannins are quite grippy, and I think the wine really just needs time for all those to come together. But having drunk an older vintage Overgouw Merlot, boy, do they come together magically. They were also producers of a wine called Tria Corda, which was one of the first Bordeaux-style blends produced in the country. And they've got a unique German variety called Silvana, which they make, which is a lovely, crisp, delicate, fruity wine. But this one, I think, is something very special, the Overgouw Merlot 2017.
Now, you know, Michael, I always disagree with you. And I have to say that you would give it a bit more cellaring. I'm really enjoying it.
It's got
everything.
Eminently drinkable.
It's beautifully fruity. It's so elegant. And Merlot, I think, is known as one of the more feminine wines. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine myself getting into a cocktail dress, high heels, and just sipping this all evening. It's magic. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Good.
Chris Hart.
I think to me it's when you sip it, it's a little bit of a punch in the mouth. The tannins are like very overwhelming, and so I can't say I'm enjoying it as you are. It's just that I think it's it's certainly not a subtle wine. This is very robust, and certainly my take on it. I think I prefer a more subtle one. I'm not sure if I'll get into high heels, you know, to drink this one quite.
I think you must just keep on sipping because it'll just get better with each sip. Yes. Mm.
Well, it's nice not to agree with you for a change, yeah. Chris. Yeah. Chris Skillman.
It does grip you, and I think there's a lot, as you say, Michael, there's a lot of tannin in there still. So, yeah, this is going to last a long, long time. And 5 years hence, I think it's going to be really smooth. It's nice, I like it, but I mean, it's just a little bit, I hesitate to use the word rough, but it's a little bit rough for me.
Yes, I would use the word rough.
Yeah, I think the fruit is forward.
Yeah, everything there is, yeah.
I think the oak is there. I think the tannins, I wouldn't, as Chris described them, as overwhelming. I think they are quite grippy. Mm. And I think those elements, once they sort of knit together and mature together, are certainly going to make for a sensational wine.
And some of us like a bit of rough. Mike Schisler.
No, I'm very for this wine. I can see that there's a bit of tannin. I think it's maybe a year or two from its peak. I don't think it's five
decades from its peak, I think, Mike.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. I think it's going to...
I think another 5 years would be...
Okay, but then I must say it's very much drinkable now for me. I can taste it. I hear what Chris is saying about the tannins, and there's no doubt there is a bit of tannin, but I think you can taste the quality otherwise, and I think this particular brand, I've had quite a few of their wines over the years, and I must say I have never been disappointed. Yeah, and
impressive.
That I would say any day. This is a bit young, but not that much young. Mm-hmm. I really think in a year or two it's perfect.
I just think that for a well established family winery in Stellenbosch, I think that they fly under the radar a bit much. I really wish that more people would look for and drink Overgaard wines.
Jeremy?
I'm afraid I don't like it. It's the most aggressive Merlot I think I've ever tasted. And some of the words floating around, I agree with, almost a little bit rough to start with. On the other hand, if I had a case of this, I'd put it away for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
But as it stands at the moment... even with a pepper steak and a load of Dijon mustard, I think it would be quite aggressive.
Well, I could handle that.
What do you like the rough, John? So,
Jeremy, a while back we were talking about religious tolerance and religious intolerance. Now, I went for a breakfast with our beloved Tito Mboweni and our even more beloved Ibrahim Patel, two of our better known ministers, just before they jetted off to Davos. So they could each get a free scarf. And there was a breakfast buffet, and there were some very nice sausages, and eventually they brought out some quite pleasant scrambled eggs, but there was no bacon. And I assumed the sausages were beef. Now, I have absolutely no problem with anyone who doesn't want to eat pork or anything else from a pig. Mm-hmm. David Cameron, he has my full backing. But I just find that bacon is an essential part of an English breakfast. And having lived in England a lot of my life, I like English breakfasts. I don't have them very often because I'm too lazy to do much more than pour a bowl of cereal in the morning. Mm. But when I go out for breakfast, getting up at the crack of dawn or before, I really like to be rewarded with a few rashers, well, a few dozen rashers of bacon. And that intolerance, I mean, you will find fast food shops which insist on being halal and therefore you can't get bacon burgers. Burger King recently did introduce bacon burgers. And we have the problem that there are people who don't like alcohol or don't drink alcohol for religious reasons and therefore think nobody else in their circle should drink alcohol. How much do you think, Jeremy, that those of us who are relatively normal are being hounded, harassed and bullied by those who aren't?
John, that was a long question. Where do I start? Because in my house...
Shall I pass it on?
pass what on? My one daughter has gone totally vegan at the moment. And you know, when she stayed with us for 10 days over Christmas, I was looking in my fridge thinking, whose fridge is this? Because it's not my fridge. All sorts of strange things, from almond milk through to things that aren't really sausages but look like sausages. And I'm told, well, when you get the braai going, it's 3 minutes on one side, 3 minutes on the other, and it's ready to eat. So
already throw in the bin.
I think all of us have to respect each other and respect our roots and our background and what's going on. I get upset when people, as you're saying, try and stiff-arm you into their way of thinking, and I think that's totally wrong. And here you were at a public function where you were being given breakfast, and I think you should have been given the choice.
Choice, yeah.
And that's what, to me, life is about, choice. If I go into a restaurant, now again, my kids never order straight off the menu. They'll say, can we have that, but we want a bit of that and a bit of that and take that off and that, that. And that's the world we live in. We want choice. And if we can't get the choice, we're not going to go back. So I think if you're serious about business today, everyone's got to have a choice and you've got to respect their wishes.
Yeah, funny enough, that's the fourth industrial revolution. It's mass customization, not as much as disruption as mass customization. And people say, this is the menu and no variations will be entertained, are pretty much operating a mass production 20th century business model. But I think certainly these things are personal choices. And when one takes a personal choice, that's fine. But when you actually impose it on other people, you are moralizing. And that's where I think it goes wrong. So I think it's certainly fine if you don't like bacon, don't choose the bacon.
Well, you can have the salmon or whatever. Yeah. Earlier today I had...
No, there wasn't any salmon.
I had Eggs Benedict with crispy bacon. No, perfect. Yes. And I'm not meant to eat bacon, so that was my one dose for the month.
we could certainly pick you out where you're drinking some wine with the bacon.
And it's breakfast.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to hotels that they have a special station for the bacon and the pork sausages and stuff. And it's fine. And I've been around places where many Muslims are, and they own the hotel, and they have other people serving you the wine, and they just don't serve the wine. You know, you've got to come, son. I think it's something, it's a bit of the intolerance that we shouldn't have that's coming to the fore.
I remember spending a week in the Gulf Hotel in Bahrain doing a South African wine and food week there. And the choice in the dining room at breakfast was just so amazing. And there was a whole separate buffet for people who didn't eat pork products. And, you know, being there for a week, I had a chance to explore everything, including artificial bacon. I must say my breakfast eating habits swung way more to hummus and the wonderful olives that they had than to the sort of traditional English breakfast. But I like the fact that there was a separate buffet for non-pork products. I mean, you could have a camel curry if you wanted for breakfast as well.
Goodness gracious.
We're getting a setup also where one's self-censoring. You know, you get stories, you know, where for hundreds of years the town would put a Christmas tree. Now it's more multicultural. They decide we don't put a Christmas tree because we might offend people of other religions. And I think that is when things really have gone wrong. When you actually should be embracing your own culture, but you've got no other cultures you've missed when they have Diwali or Ramadan, you embrace that as well, you know, in that, because it gives an opportunity to discuss, etc. But when one suppresses asymmetrically, if I could put it that way, then it has gone wrong.
Yeah. Talking of Christmas, and you were talking about mass customization.
Yeah.
I always like to go to mass at 3 a.m. when it's in Latin, and they're very accommodating.
Yes. But I think you go because of the wine, the communion.
Unfortunately, it changes into something. But let's not go down that path. We've already gone from red wine to Christmas trees, and that's probably far enough. So it just remains for me to thank our guest tasters today. Chris Hart, Jeremy Sampson, Mike Schussler, and Chris Gilmore. And of course, to thank the man with the corkscrew, the man who makes all this possible, Michael Olivier. Michael, thank you very much. What were we drinking?
We were drinking Urvachauer Merlot 2017. I don't have a price, but I would think it would be somewhere between 350 and 400 grand a bottle.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, tasters. I'm John Fraser. That was ZA Confidential.